This is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Willkommen to our one, some quick news. The Jersey, I think it's called Jersey Channel Island, just off of UK. It's a strange sort of thing. It's kind of like a country, but it's not a country. It's got its own thing going on. But apparently, the Jersey's largest vegetable producer has made its final deliveries, ending a 135-year family farming tradition. They have Woodside Farms has produced 80% of the island's fresh vegetables for 7 years. And basically, they are saying they're stopping because of the operational costs, the spiraling operational costs. And they say that obviously it reduces food security because they've lost their biggest vegetable producer. So now they're going to be have to be getting more from the UK. And it's just a sign. We're seeing this every single day. If you know about the Great Reset, then you understand precisely what's going on. Supply chains breaking down, insane inflation, wiping out the middle class, food shortages. And if you believe some analysts, forthcoming famines, and that will especially be a problem on an island. I mean, imagine that really sucks for Jersey. Imagine, I mean, the situation they had going was great. You know, they're on an island and they've got their own fresh vegetables. And now you're kind of screwed. So that's no good. And more trend in that direction. This is from Spain, coming out of Spain, this article. It's talking about beer is beginning to disappear. And they're even talking about a complete end of its production, aggravated by, quote, climate change, inflation, and the energy crisis. So you're going to have no food and no beer. So that will be a sad state of affairs. And so, yep, that's the way the cookie crumbles. So it's affecting everything, shortages in water, which means shortages in beer. They're talking about in different places of the world. Also mentioning Mexico. I mean, obviously, if you got water shortage, you're not going to be making beer. There are things more important than that. We've also got further Great Reset news. In Hong Kong, they're saying that an internet connection will be required for premises responsible for checking vaccine passes, such as restaurants, as part of the health code arrangement for COVID patients and overseas arrivals. So think about that. Everyday places that maybe you go out to, cafes, yeah, they usually have like their own Wi-Fi that customers can use, but you know, oftentimes restaurants don't. So you just, you know, you go to the restaurant for food, and now they will have to have internet so they can check everyone's COVID digital passports. I mean, this is the new normal. If you thought we were going back to the old normal, forget about it. I mean, the fact that they're doing this is they are laying the permanent infrastructure going forward for this total recall, insane, dystopian, biosecurity, technocracy state. Yeah, here you go. And this is Hong Kong. Now, imagine, I mean, this is going to be coming up everywhere going forward. And they talk about QR code verification scanner and making sure the devices, businesses and such places use can connect to Wi-Fi or mobile data to check customers' records. This is totally insane. But welcome to our brave new world. And Sierra Leone has shut off internet access to crush cost of living protests, a growing tactic around the world. So the West African country of Sierra Leone had total internet blackout, pretty much. As people were protesting, basically the Great Reset, the rising cost of living, and calling for the resignation of the current president. NetBlocks has reported the connectivity drop, fixed line and mobile internet operators. So, yeah, you won't hear about it in the news and everything will seem normal as countries collapse in this way. And before we get to our guest, if you missed your favorite TNT radio show or interview, just you can listen back whenever you want. Everything is on the website, tntradio.live, and on all of the podcast platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, all of that. There is no reason to miss out anything on TNT Radio.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. TNT.
I am joined by Gabriel Custodiat, host of the Watchman Privacy Podcast. He's been living a privacy lifestyle for many years and figuring things out from research and sheer experimentation. He enjoys consulting and teaching others to live more genuine lives through techniques of secrecy and the cultivation of a worldview that sustains individual freedom. He's also author of the book, The Watchman Guide to Privacy, Reclaim Your Digital Financial and Lifestyle Freedom. And you can follow him on Twitter at Watchman Privacy, as well as his YouTube channel. Welcome to TNT, Gabriel.
Hello, how are you doing today?
I'm doing as good as one can in this great reset. But you know what makes me feel better is I'm out here in Croatia on the beautiful Adriatic, and so it's a very nice place to watch. You know, from a nice perch from which to watch, observe the world. And by the way, is it, given you write and talk about privacy, I have to ask: is Gabriel Custodiat your real name?
Well, it's a name I identify with. Let's just put it like that.
All right. Very fair enough. How did you start getting into the privacy space and coming about writing the book and starting the podcast?
Yeah. So I think, like a lot of people, maybe in your audience, for the last few years, especially, I have started to look at the world and change my my assumptions about how it works. And of course, I encountered Austrian economics and libertarianism and these kind of foreign ideas, which when you can't listen to them on podcasts, you're not really exposed to. And my take on all this was a little bit different. It came from the privacy angle, where I looked at the world and I saw, okay, why are we not talking as much and giving suggestions for how to be private? Because I think privacy is the ultimate tactic to gain freedom in our lives. And so there's another thing going on where I think a lot of people who, at least when you read privacy forms, there's this sense that, right, this is mine, right? My face is mine. My data is mine. And there's this almost a little bit neurotic desire to protect that, to say, look, you can't have that. And that's a little bit of what drove me. But I do think that people are exposing their privacy, their data left and right. And so I decided to start practicing this stuff. I wrote a book on it. And I have a podcast now where I talk about privacy, not just in terms of, okay, here, change these settings on your iPhone. We do cover all that stuff. But I talk about a little bit big picture things as well. I just had an episode on climate change surveillance. One of my favorite episodes is called Psychopaths and Privacy. Rental Culture and Slavery is another one of my shows. So I look at privacy in a little bit of a broader perspective.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned you fell down the Austrian school and libertarian rabbit hole. The same happened to me. I wouldn't identify as a libertarian, but I'm very libertarian-ish. And it's funny how I often have many guests who are libertarians. Just, I like freedom. I think everyone should like freedom. But there are people who don't like freedom. I meet them. They say, yes, we need a strong government to lock us down because there's a virus or because of this or because of that. And for me, these are like alien extraterrestrials coming from another planet. I cannot understand anyone who thinks like that. And again, I highly recommend your book. I haven't finished it. I got the Kindle. I'm starting to read it, and I can tell immediately that it's high quality. And I think what you mentioned as well, it's important, the general principles, not so much the details. I would recommend the book. I know there's a lot of stuff in there that I intuitively apply, but as always, you point stuff out that, you know, I hadn't thought of. And it's becoming harder and harder to maintain one's privacy, isn't it?
Well, for sure. It's becoming harder, and it has been harder for the last 100 years. But there's still all kinds of tools, and tools that I think a lot of people are either not aware of or they're simply not doing. You have basic tools like everybody should be using a VPN when they connect to the internet at any given time. Everybody should be using private messengers instead of SMS, text messages, and emails, ideally. So we have all these tools. Encryption works. It's a fabulous tool. It makes us able to have great online privacy if we use these tools. But you're totally right. Of course, privacy these days it's been dying. It's certainly dying. The COVID stuff did not help at all. We have an internet that is based around the idea that we need to track everybody at all times. And if you're using a VPN, if you're using some of these other things, we don't want you on our website. We're fingerprinting you, right? You go to Amazon and they're looking at what browser you're using, how many fonts you have installed. They can detect all of this stuff. So even if you are, let's say, using a VPN or you think you're being clever, they can still fingerprint you and say, oh, this is the same person who was on yesterday or the same person who owns this account. So there's some really sophisticated stuff that's going on. And so I try to break it down as best I can. I try to give some tools because, yeah, it's crazy out there. And if you don't understand some of the basics about how these systems work in our lives, you're going to get wrecked. It's as simple as that.
I had a fascinating experience when I was out in Kazakhstan from 2017 to 2020. I was technically working for Nursultan Nazarbayev, the president of 30 years. He stepped down in 2018. I was working at the Nazarbayev Intellectual School, but it's a semi-light authoritarian government. And, you know, one thing, when I first moved there, we actually had a policeman knock on our door one evening and walk into our kitchen. Very friendly guy, but it was just quite an experience where he came in, just fill out some papers, and he had to make sure that we were living where we were registered, that we were living. You know, I've never experienced that in any country, but I always used the VPN in Kazakhstan. And at some point, the government like blocked it stopped working. And then I got a second VPN service, and then they did the same. And then I finally got a third VPN service, and then it worked. And then at some point, they blocked completely nationwide my private email service. I use StartMail, and that's blocked in Russia and Kazakhstan at the ISP level. And then the Kazakh government attempted to get everyone in Kazakhstan to install a browser certificate from the Kazakh government that would, if installed, it will allow them to see everything you're doing, like your username, your passwords. I mean, it's insane. Like, if you log into your bank account, they would see everything. And, you know, your sort of reaction to that.
Yeah, that is some crazy stuff, my friend. That is, you're certainly in the midst of some hardcore censorship and surveillance and all the rest. I would not want to live in those places. Sure. I suspect you found a way around some of this in the end. I know that the Tor network and the Tor browser are some tools that tend to be good at getting around some of the stuff. There's certainly things that can be done if surveillance and censorship are taken to that level, but it's difficult. And at the end of the day, I think in last year, the country shut down the internet around the world dozens of times. So it's getting to the point where, okay, you have a VPN, you're using the Tor browser, but what happens if things just, you know, the internet just gets shut down? And unfortunately, unfortunately, that's the other problem with the internet is that it's so centralized that you have all these cables, and there's only so many of them, and they're going to different parts. They're going to these central repositories at the end of the day. And so you do lose control. So what's the solution to that particular thing? I don't know. I mean, some people look at Elon Musk's Starlink, the satellite-based internet. We'll see. I do hold out that technology can move as fast as tyranny. So we'll just have to see what comes of that.
One qualm I have, as you mentioned, Tor, I mean, like I said, eventually I got a VPN to work, and then I could access my email privately. And there was so much backlash with the browser certificate, and even Mozilla said, we're not accepting, you know, we're not going to approve it. And so we didn't have to install those things. But I think using something like Tor, and even at times a VPN, can be cumbersome if your internet speed isn't good enough. No, because if you have a slow internet speed, then it becomes really tough to use a VPN or Tor sometimes. No.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. I'm sure the internet megabytes per second is not exactly high in Kazakhstan. So yeah, the downside with the Tor browser is it slows down your internet markedly because you are being funneled through multiple different servers around the world. So it is a slow, miserable experience. If that's your experience with the internet every day, that would be incredibly frustrating. VPNs are getting to the point, especially if you're using the WireGuard implementation of VPNs. It should only slow it down by a small percentage. But yeah, I'm fortunately not living in places like Kazakhstan, so I can use a few more tools in the arsenal and have a little bit more smooth experience with some of these things.
Actually, to tell you the truth, in Kazakhstan they had surprisingly fast internet, and
okay.
I also live in Mexico, and there it's also surprisingly fast. Depending what you pay for, again, where you live as well, but I can get there 100 megs. I mean, in Croatia now, and here it's for being Europe, it's actually surprising how it's not that great, the internet infrastructure. But anyways, it's interesting, you know, in different parts of the world. And the WireGuard, yeah, that's a new VPN development that I've seen that's interesting, that does speed things up. We're going to take our first break, Gabriel. The Gabriel's website is, I'm forgetting now. Oh, what's your website again?
WatchmanPrivacy.com.
And people can follow you on Twitter as well at Watchman Privacy. And the book is The Watchman Guide to Privacy, Reclaim Your Digital, Financial, and Lifestyle Freedom. We will be right back on TNT.
You should hear what Shannon Joy is talking about.
The revolt in Netherlands by the farmers, and in Germany and in Canada, the new ESG scores and the new sustainability goals that we're seeing in the United States of America pushed by Biden, this war on farming, this war on the ability for humans to access food. Some are calling it the starvation agenda. It is actually rooted in a declaration that was put together almost 10 years ago in 2015 with the adoption of UN Agenda 2030. If you want to understand what is happening in terms of politics, you have to understand the United Nations, the UN Agenda 21, and the UN Agenda 2030. That is the framework for the Great Reset, and it lays everything out, and they've been at this for many, many decades.
The Shannon Joy Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I view Al Sharpton as a poverty pimp.
Terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland.
I walk outside every day in fear of white supremacy right here in the middle of the hood. Okay, yeah, right.
My grandparents had a cross burned on their property. We were slaves in the past. We're free now.
I never seen a white supremacist in my life. Never, and they can't point to one. Where the hell are they? I wish somebody would introduce me to a white supremacist. I would like to talk to them and take pictures with them, because I never seen one in my life.
Biden says that the country is systematically racist. You know, I almost want to look at him and say, haven't you been the system for the last 50 years?
He's the one that sponsored the 1994 crime bill, which unequivocally basically targeted black men in black neighborhoods.
The polarization, the left versus right, the black versus white.
Pro-choice against pro-life.
I work for Black Lives Matter. I'm sorry that I scared you.
People have had to make it like they're apologizing for their whiteness.
And could you just please apologize for, you know, for your white privilege?
What's more disheartening to me is that those who are within the black community are allowing for that to take place.
So really what we're dealing with is a cultural Marxism that Joe Biden and all the rest from the left were trying to inculcate into our society.
Well, you were once the oppressor, so now I must be the oppressor. You don't avenge evil for evil.
It's okay to say disparaging things against white people. Our former president, Barack Obama, said it, you know, about old white men are a problem. Except when it comes time for him to fly around on their airplanes and ride around on their yachts, or be their next door neighbors, or endorse them for president like Joe Biden. then old white men are okay. This is their last gasp.
What do progressive socialists really want?
Watch Systematic Deception at salemnow.com.
During the pandemic, 129 billion unrecyclable masks were used and thrown away every month. Over 3 billion masks now pollute the oceans. Let's not turn a blind eye to this disgusting plastic pollution. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we are back. We're talking with Gabriel Custodiet of the Watchman Privacy Podcast, author of The Watchman Guide to Privacy, Reclaim Your Digital Financial and Lifestyle Freedom. I highly recommend the book. Follow him on Twitter at Watchman Privacy and the website watchmanprivacy.com. And you can find his podcast on YouTube as well. And one thing you touch on it at the beginning of your book, and I think is also a crucial question is, you know, one thing I can't stand as well as or understand are the people who say I have nothing to hide and just don't care, you know, about their privacy, which is absolutely ridiculous. And when you really think about it, I mean, it's dangerous, even at a personal level. How do you explain this phenomenon of people who cannot grasp this essential idea and importance of privacy and security? And how do you kind of respond to those sort of people?
Yeah, if somebody says that to me, the first thing I tend to say these days is, you know, great, I don't care. Just don't interfere with my privacy. Edward Snowden put it like this. He said, and I don't know if he was borrowing this from somebody else. He said, saying that you don't care about your privacy because you have nothing to hide is like saying you don't care about free speech because you have nothing to say, right? So I don't really care if you're not concerned about your privacy. Just make sure that you do not vote in any people who are going to be taking my privacy. But, you know, beyond that, I tell people, well, would you be willing to share some of your login credentials, or, you know, let me see your phone, or would you be interested? Let's say you're gay, right? Would you be interested in going to any of the 9 countries in the world where you could receive the death penalty for being gay and being outspoken about it or posting about it on Twitter and Facebook? What about the, you know, the $6 trillion of cybercrime each year that happens because people are giving out their information? They're on the receiving end of phishing attacks because they are giving out their email addresses willy-nilly to the far reaches of the internet, to anybody who comes asking. You know, there are entire forums of people who collect credit cards, which they have taken from websites that people have used the credit cards online, and these get hacked. And there are entire forums of people who sell these cards, right? So, you know, there's a great book. It's called 3 Felonies a Day by Harvey Silverglate. And he makes the assertion that from his studies that the average American commits 3 felonies per day unknowingly. And that just tells you how many laws are in existence. So, you know, if somebody came to raid you like they came to raid President Trump, and you say, oh, I don't have anything to hide, well, I'll tell you what, they will find something, right? If somebody goes through your computers, through all of your records, they're going to find something, right? Whether maybe that's just, we look at your phone records, we see that you made this phone call at the same time that your Google Maps app shows that you were driving, and you were driving through a state in the US where it's illegal to use a mobile phone while you're driving. So there you go, right? Number one on the checklist of things that we can, one of the charges we can have against you. So it's really silly to say that you have nothing to hide. Obviously we have things to hide. It's silly, and you're right, it's dangerous because it encourages these people, like, I think, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, I start my book, he says that, you know, privacy is no longer a social value. Right. And then this guy buys all of the mansions surrounding his own in the Bay Area. Why is that? For privacy. And he wins after that the next year, Mark Zuckerberg, and he bought a private island for his family. Why? Because he understands, like everybody else, privacy is important. Privacy is protection. Privacy is peace of mind. Privacy is one of the most important things we have. So come on, people.
Yeah. And just to look at another example that I've had on my mine, even at the ISP level, the internet service provider level, where you get your internet from, and you mentioned VPN before, and just thinking about a country like Mexico, where I live in, and you know, everyone knows about the narco situation, the criminal organizations. I mean, if they're not narcos, then, you know, they're just criminal organizations, and I view it as they've penetrated, you know, many parts of the society, the government, the corporations, and I wouldn't be surprised if there are Mexican ISPs that have criminals or, you know, narcos embedded or as employees, and then imagine what they could do if they have access to, you know, any customers. They could just see everything that you're doing, and then imagine how such criminals could then go after some, you know, wealthier or anyone that they want. If they could see their internet, you know, they could extort them, they can go after them. What are your thoughts on, you know, that as an example and that possibility?
Well, yeah, that's a perfect example. And the fundamental truth is that the way that websites work these days is that there are so many third parties involved in a website. So you go to eBay and they have all these different widgets that they're using, and some of them come from different companies. So when you place an order on eBay, you have exposed your information to possibly dozens of companies and thousands of employees, each of whom could make a mistake and have your data leaked in some way by accident or by social manipulation, something like this. All of these breaches that we see, we forget about these breaches of, you know, hundreds of millions of records, whether that's Equifax, you know, whoever that is, everybody's been breached. And most of them have not told you yet, because they usually wait for months, if not a couple of years, to resolve the situation, to get in position legally, and then they tell you. So all of your data is kind of leaking out there. And yours is a perfect example. In Mexico, where you have a lot of criminal elements who are who have their tendrils into these things. There are stories of expats who go to Mexico. They start up a Mexican bank account. They put in a ton of money there. They think, oh, I'm doing my diversification, getting out of the U.S. banking system. And they don't realize that these banks are tipping off some of these narco guys. And guess what? You gave them your address. They know who you are. They know that you have $50,000 in the bank. And guess who is going to get their child kidnapped next week, unfortunately. So yeah, and that's why I advocate self-sufficiency is the only real solution at the end of the day for this exposure. Do more things yourself. Keep your data to yourself more often. Do not have as many accounts in as many places. Have more cash on hand. Be careful where you put your cash and your valuables on your property. And just don't be as exposed to these systems.
Yeah, and just even one more example. And this is happening often now in Mexico. I'm reading the stories where when you talk about tipping off, even in the banks, like the tellers in the physical bank, it's clear that there are criminal, some of the employees are criminals, because I'm reading nonstop stories where wealthy, you know, just typical businessmen, for whatever reason, they go to the bank and they withdraw like 10 or, you know, 10 or 20 or 30 or $40,000, in Mexican pesos. You know, it's like 100, 200, 300,000. Whatever pesos, and they need it for whatever business, legitimate business purpose, or just a citizen who's just getting their savings to buy a home or something. And I'm just reading nonstop where they'll go in, they'll get this pile of cash, and then as soon as they go out, you know, there's two thieves with guns they usually come on a motorcycle. And take the money. They point the gun at, you know, they threaten their life to get the money. And this is happening nonstop. So obviously in these banks, you've got these crooks, tellers. And as soon as they see you're withdrawing the cash, I mean, it's over. There's no way. You walk out of the bank and you get robbed. And there's nothing. The police, government can't do anything. And so you have to think of ways around that. It's really tough. I don't know how you would get around that. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you get around that by not living in that part of Mexico. but besides that, one thing you could do is, okay, you're aware of this. And so you keep your financial accounts, you keep your, let's say, your Canadian credit card, and you simply use that in Mexico, right? The Mexican banks have no knowledge of you using your Canadian credit card out and about. So maybe that's a solution. Otherwise, just, you know, keep your wits about you. One thing you can do, of course, to not be vulnerable to petty theft is to, don't dress like you're a rich person. Don't wear that steel watch, which signals wealth. Try to blend in. All the kind of basic stuff. That's, I don't know, maybe that'll help somebody. But yeah, be careful where you live, especially in Mexico.
Yeah, I've met some wealthy people in Mexico because I taught at the top school, and you know, half of the students came from upper class to ultra rich. I mean, some of the students had Lamborghinis. I remember one student, when she turned, when she graduated high school, she turned 18, her father bought her a military Humber, not the commercial Humvee, but the military version. And meanwhile, the kids were making fun of me. I was driving a 2001 Honda CRV, Mama Mobile, as they called it, and they're driving Lamborghinis and things like that. But you know, I had become, some of the families would invite me over for dinner, and I know there was one wealthy family that I saw the parents at like the 7-Eleven, and the guy, he had like a rundown car and just wearing just old t-shirt and shorts. And I mean, this guy was worth, I don't know how much, but in Mexico is like wealthy. And so that's a perfect example of what you're talking about. We're going to have to take a short news break. We will be right back.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. The Russian Foreign Ministry says that Ukraine's shelling of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is an act of terrorism that could trigger a disaster that would eclipse the 1986 Chernobyl incident. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has said the responsibility for the conflict in Ukraine lies with the Russian government and not its people, and therefore it is hard to imagine a complete visa ban for Russian citizens.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
So, you've talked about how COVID-1984 was sort of just the surveillance state we already had amplified. And again, our next challenge will be the climate change, which will be used as a pretext to further amplify this insane surveillance state. And, you know, going forward, could you sort of describe what you think are some of the main threats to privacy and liberty coming down the pipe that maybe you think most about?
Yeah, I think it all boils down to one thing, which is that there are people in power. They like power. Some of them are psychopaths. If you don't know what a psychopath is, you better start learning. Start with my episode, Privacy and Psychopaths. But some people just want to control other people, and those people are not going away. And there is a move towards collectivization that has been happening for the last 100 years. And when you set off that domino, you cannot undo it. So this is the trend we're going in. And it doesn't matter if it's climate change or COVID or whatever the case may be, whatever excuse, right? The solution is always going to come from the government. And it's always going to be, look, we're going to control things. We're going to have whatever we need to do, martial law, shut down the borders. We have the solution. You're the peon. So you're going to do what we say. So I listen to the news these days. I try to stay up to date with things, but because I understand this fundamental reality, I kind of don't need to, right? Because I understand what is motivating these people. And so, yeah, one of my recent episodes was on climate change surveillance. And it was just a reflection on some of the ways that, well, first of all, right, climate change, it's a problem, right? According to a lot of people, it's a problem. It's not just a problem. It's a huge problem. It's catastrophic, right? It is, right? There are people talking about how it's unearthing these ancient viruses in the Arctic and how that's a threat. I mean, my goodness. So climate change is an existential threat. So what is the solution? Anything is the solution. If we're all going to die, then anything is the solution. And so Al Gore, our friend Al Gore, of course, he wrote an article in 2020 on a Medium account. It's called "We Can Solve the Climate Change Crisis by Tracing Pollution Back to Its Sources." And so he talks about this coalition that is formed of people who are going to start tracking carbon emissions on land, on sea, using satellites. I don't even know some of the technology that they're going to use, but they're pretty adamant and confident that they're going to be able to keep tabs on all of the carbon that is being emitted from companies, from governments. Of course, they don't mention the 5% of pollution that comes from the world's militaries, right? Because that's not really convenient. But of course, we have the problem. The solution is always going to be top-down, government coercive. And in this case, it's climate change. We also have, of course, from the past years, past decades, smart meters, if people are familiar with that. It was kind of just a taste, right? These smart meters, these interconnected systems that we put these onto our utilities, right, outside of our house, and oftentimes they were forced, and it tracks how much energy we're using. And the idea that they said at the time, and these were, you know, these are now common across the world, especially in North America, was that we're going to keep track of how much energy is being used so that we can, be better at, be better custodians of this energy. But of course, it's a way of slipping in the idea that, well, of course, that means we could theoretically control it. We could shut it down, right? We are keeping tabs on things so that we can control it later. Google Flights now has these carbon calculators. A MasterCard is rolling out a program where you can calculate all of the carbon costs of your purchases. Now, this is just data at the moment, but I think we can imagine what happens when they say, well, look, here's your carbon allowance, right? And all these systems are already in place. And so just say no to these systems, try to get around them. It's the same solution for the same problem at the end of the day.
Yeah, that seems to be the end game where they're taking us, this sort of climate world order, this world government, and they're using the pretext of global warming, the theory of global warming or climate change to get us there, and using the international governmental organizations to sort of establish supranational power over nation states. And one of my biggest concerns is this social credit system that's coming to the West. And I saw early on in 2020 the whole agenda. That's one reason I fled from Kazakhstan back to Mexico. I interviewed in June in 2020 Jewish historian Edwin Black, who talks about the what he calls eugenics and the algorithm ghetto and the cashless society, where just as Jews were put in the physical the physical ghetto, in this new system, dystopian system, if you commit a thought crime, and it could be for anything, you didn't get your vaccine, you don't agree with the LGBT transgender agenda, you don't agree with the climate agenda, you question the election integrity, blah, 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 whatever, they can just deplatform you from all of your socials, freeze your bank account. Even we saw in some countries, like the Philippines, if you were caught outside of your house unvaccinated, like you could be thrown into the quarantine camp and fined. So you may not even be able to leave your home if you don't have good standing in the social credit system, and your neighbor won't help you, because if your neighbor tries to buy you food, he'll be thrown in the algorithm ghetto. It's insane. And your thoughts on this social credit system?
Yeah, it's like people read 1984, they read Revelations, the Mark of the Beast, and they said, wow, that's a great idea. Let's roll that out. I mean, come on, like Peter Thiel, his company, Palantir Technologies, he named the company after the evil crystal balls in Lord of the Rings. Like it's insane that people are okay with this, that these things are being rolled out. Now, a social credit score, which they talk about, is rolled out in China. I have a friend who goes to China, and he's a little bit skeptical of Western media reporting on it. So I've kind of taken a little step back for the moment. But supposedly there's the social credit score system in China, and if you are logged into your video game accounts online, because most of these you have to log in order to be able to play them. I guess theoretically you could play some kind of single player, but I mean, are there even any single player games anymore these days? And so if you play too many video games, that's a strike against you. Of course, if you're maybe downloading a VPN, whatever you're doing, that's a strike against you. It's obviously a powerful way to control people. I mean, go back and read 1984, people. Surveillance is control. If you're being watched, if there's information about what you're doing, that is going to prevent you from doing things that you would normally do. There's a great book. I had an episode on this called Childhood's End, science fiction classic, Arthur C. Clarke. And it's about a group of aliens and they park their ships over Earth. And for the first half of the book, they don't do anything. They're just parked over the Earth. And the humans start assuming that they're watching and they assume that they're powerful and they start changing their behavior. So, I mean, you know, surveillance is control in terms of how do we escape these kind of systems? Well, geo arbitrage, be careful where you live. Obviously, speak out against it. Listen to people like me and your show and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, besides that, you know, I have a whole list of privacy techniques. But things that could battle this kind of huge system, that requires, you know, unification and an upset group of people who will not put up with it at the end of the day.
All right, we're going to take our second break. Again, the website, watchmanprivacy.com. I highly recommend the book, The Watchman Guide to Privacy, Reclaim Your Digital, Financial, and Lifestyle Freedom. And you can follow, you can find Gabriel's podcast on YouTube and follow him on Twitter at Watchman Privacy. We'll be right back.
Anthony Fauci lied and people died.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
In a rewrite of history, Anthony Fauci is now claiming that he never recommended lockdowns in the United States.
I didn't recommend locking anything down.
That was Anthony Fauci in 2022, denying he had anything to do with lockdowns. But let's go to the audio. Here's Anthony Fauci in 2020.
I recommended to the president that we shut the country down.
Fauci saying I had nothing to do with it. Fauci admitting he actually recommended the lockdowns. And let us not forget, lockdowns killed. Delayed medical treatments, depression, loneliness, poverty increase, which causes higher death rates. Isn't it time for Anthony Fauci to come clean and admit his grave error on COVID-19? For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
The strength of our country hasn't just been won on the battlefield. It's won every day in our communities when we come together in our toughest times. For over 100 years, the American Legion has been strengthening communities across our nation by providing life-saving help and support to our veterans and neighbors during times like we're facing today. We are the American Legion, veterans strengthening America. To learn how you can help, visit legion.org.
The Great Reinfection.
With thanks to the COVID vaccine.
COVID vaccines are not safe and don't work. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I love the guy who does that voiceover. Very cool voice. Well, we're on our final stretch with Gabriel, custodian of the Watchman Privacy Podcast, author of The Watchman Guide to Privacy, Reclaim Your Digital, Financial, and Lifestyle Freedom. Highly recommend the book. You can get it wherever books are sold. Follow him on Twitter at Watchman Privacy. And talking about solutions, you know, a few years ago, it seemed a bit more promising in terms of solutions. We've got Librem. I've interviewed Todd, I forget his name, the CEO of Librem. They sell those privacy laptops and phones. Early on, I bought Silent Circle's black phone. Got one for my wife and myself, and they turned out to be duds. They stopped supporting the first version. They didn't work very well in terms of hardware. And then I followed StartPage, and I got a StartMail account. Catherine Albrecht was the spokesperson for StartPage, and I was a fan of hers. I had interviewed her. And then her and Liz McIntyre, who was a consultant for StartPage, disassociated themselves because StartPage, an ad company, bought partially into StartPage. And I think that's one of the problems with all of these privacy companies. Not enough people care about privacy, and so it becomes difficult to stay afloat financially, and so then they have to sort of make compromises. We've seen DuckDuckGo now censoring search, working with Microsoft, violating privacy. And so this sort of thing, and even Paul Rosenberg, I've had him on TNT. I don't know if you know about him, Cypherpunk. He had his crypto.
I had him on my show, actually, yeah.
Okay, I'll have to go back and check that out. But he shut down his crypto hippie VPN service because there just wasn't enough interest. People don't care about privacy. And so sort of your thoughts on this trend in the privacy industry where so many companies are just making compromises.
Yeah, that's true. I wasn't aware of some of the examples you gave. I'm going to have to look into that. That's very interesting stuff. But you're right. There is not as much support for privacy as there should be. I guess I see the glass a little bit more half full. I see that a lot more people are aware of what's happening. They're online tracking. A lot of privacy shows are gaining viewers. There are a lot of people talking about crypto and privacy. You do have a lot of VPN companies. They're very commercial, and I'm very reluctant to have any kind of sponsors on my show for exactly that reason. But you have the free and open source software movement. You have a lot of those people who are very engaged with privacy. A lot of them, they put the blood, the sweat, and the tears into these amazing tools that I recommend, whether that's, you know, LibreOffice or Signal, whatever the case may be. And sure, if they get too big, they need to find funding. And you know, the only real way to fund these kind of things so that they're free and usable for the masses is to take a donation route. But there are some people coming up with different funding routes for these services. And so I do think we will see more of them. You have a ton of people like Monero, which is a privacy cryptocurrency, has the third most developers of any crypto working on it, because I think people recognize that privacy is an issue. Privacy is one of the greatest defenses we have against the new world order, against all the things coming up. And I do think that I am hopeful that there will be an increasing amount of services and such. And maybe, sure, they're trying to sell us something at the end of the day. Is it a little bit slick? Is there something going on behind the scenes? Yes, there will be some of that. But if the stuff works and you can read the code and you can see that it's doing its thing, then that's what we need. And hopefully, and I think there will be more of that stuff in the next few years.
So you mentioned Signal, and looking at the history of a lot of this stuff, I mean, Yasha Levin has pointed out how, for example, Signal was created basically from U.S. government funding. So was Tor, came about as well, funded by, I think, with the U.S. Navy. And then, but of course, you know, the internet was created by the U.S. government military. So was GPS. I think Facebook was actually a DARPA project. Google was seed funded by the Pentagon. And so there's really like no perfect software or application, but just sort of how do you view, just taking Signal, for example, does it bother you that it came from U.S. government funding, or is that irrelevant because you can look at like the source code and see that there's no issue really using it?
Yeah, so the reason why open source software, free and open source software, is like there are some privacy people that only use free and open source software, is because if they're talented enough, granted, they can download that directly from GitHub and they can see exactly what's going on, and they can get their friends to look at it as well. And they know that when they run that software, it's doing only what it says it's doing, right? There's complete transparency about the code. So whether or not Tor and Signal, yes, you're right, fishy origins, suspicious origins, origins from people who are not pro-privacy, who are not your friends. But you know, at the end of the day, we've got to have faith in something. And I do think that, you know, I do think that Tor is safe to use, is a great privacy tool. There are a lot of people who think that. And while I can't read every line of code and say, like, here's why it works, I do think that there are a number of tools. And if you start asking the people who can read the code or who do know something about this, I think that would increase your faith about using some of these.
You mentioned the NWO, the New World Order, which today I think everyone reads as the Great Reset. That's like the New World Order 2.0. That's the most recent manifestation of the New World Order. And how do you sort of view that and what's going on and sort of the road ahead? Are you worried? Are you prepping? You know, just your general thought on where we are and where we might be headed.
Yeah, my approach has always been to try to live well, try to not, you know, live in the woods or anything like that. I try to show tools so that we can enjoy life and travel around and engage with people and live in city centers if we want to. and still have some idea about what to do. Now, the New World Order, I think that term came from H.G. Wells' book many decades ago, maybe 1940, he wrote a book called The New World Order. And H.G. Wells, like I was saying, has the mindset of all these people that what we need is a group of elites who are giving top-down instructions about how the world should organize. It's all about organization. It has to be collectivization. There's a deep skepticism of laissez-faire, of letting things just happen as they organically would in a decentralized way. And so I think the enemy, however you want to label them, Great Reset, New World Order, they all believe this fundamentally. Some of them, as I said, are psychopaths, and their only interest is in controlling people, essentially. And so when you have that view of the world, when you see what the enemy is doing, well, you do what you can. So I do some prepping. I have all the tools at my disposal. I keep one foot in the digital realm, which I do think is a fantastic way to have some privacy. For example, I have a Bitcoin course that I sell, a private Bitcoin course. You can memorize 12 words. Okay, you can put some money into Bitcoin. You can memorize 12 words. You can cross any border in the world without any computer. You can find a computer on the other side. You can type in your seed phrase and you can have access to whatever, however much money you put into Bitcoin, 2 million, whatever. So things like Bitcoin and Monero and such, these are powerful tools that do make me a little bit optimistic that we have some things at our disposal. Obviously, we need to keep aware of what's going on, who the enemies are. But I am always trying to offer solutions, whether that's cryptocurrency, whether that's basic things, making sure we don't hit a cashless society, using as much cash as we can, storing up our precious metals and our gold, using our VPNs, using our private messengers, getting off of all the big tech options and getting onto alternatives, whether that's using Linux, whether that's using Odyssey instead of YouTube, all these kind of things, and just do the best we can. That's kind of my position.
It sometimes feels like things look really bleak. For example, it seems like we are on the verge of this CBDC cashless society. We saw in Ireland, in rural Ireland, they just attempted to in the rural Irish banks, they attempted to eliminate cash completely. So that would mean in the rural areas, there'd be no cash. So if you're living in a small Irish town, there's no cash at all. And you'd be forced by default to use debit card, credit card, or your smartphone or whatever to pay. People pushed back. And for now they said, oh, just kidding. And so we just got like about 3 minutes left. Any comment on how imminent CBDC cashless society might be?
Yeah, I have an early episode on central bank digital currencies. And as always, I'm looking for the solutions. I've been testing and I've had a lot of friends testing. For example, I didn't realize how much you could use prepaid debit cards, right? Let's say you live in the US, you go to a Dollar General or a Walgreens, you pick up one of these prepaid Visa cards. They're called a vanilla gift Visa cards. Put $500 on there. It's a little fee to do it. And you can use these things anywhere you want, even including most online purchases. So I have an episode coming up. I'm going to talk about private ways to pay. We do have crypto. And while some people say, yeah, you can't use Bitcoin for everything, there are websites like BitRefill, where if you have Bitcoin, you can buy gift cards. Gift cards are a fabulous privacy strategy. You buy them with cash. You buy them however you want with cash or crypto, and you use gift cards. So there will be ways, and I'm glad that the Irish were pushing back against this. I'm always looking for the solutions. Those are just a couple I mentioned. And of course, keep speaking out against this stuff. We do not want to live in a cashless society. That is no good. So please, people, if you're listening, put down the credit cards, start using cash. Do not support the credit card system. I know you like the idea, but most people don't actually do it. So please make that your goal for the rest of the week. Only use cash.
All right. 1 minute left. Where are the best places to find you? And what are all the things you offer? You got your book, podcast, and so on.
Yeah. If you go to my website, Watchmen, that's singular, watchmenprivacy.com, you're going to be connected to my stuff. I have a book, as you've graciously announced, and it's 240-page book on basically how to lock yourself down from a privacy perspective, digital privacy. We talk about crypto. We talk about all the digital privacy and as well as the physical privacy. So that is the book, The Watchman Guide to Privacy. It's on Amazon, so I can independent publish, kind of a deal with the devil, but what can you do? And yeah, go to my website, watchmanprivacy.com, have a podcast, talk about some interesting things, and happy to be on. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Gabriel. We're out of time. Stay tuned for our next guest.